Hello and welcome to volume 45, number 27 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 4th of July 2025. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Desney and Andrew. And in the news, the weather and carelessness bring us wildfires. Protesters campaign against dog racing in the heat. And anyone want to buy a wind pump? Once again, plenty of news stories, but first, the birthdays. Yes, best birthday wishes go out to Pauline Connett for Monday the 7th, followed on Thursday the 11th by Tony Mouton and Patricia Jones. We wish you all enjoyable days. Right, it's time for the first part of the news, so it's over to Andrew and Desney.
The shortlist has been announced for the UK Theme Park Awards 2025, and East Anglia is up for a host of gongs. The awards, which are now in their sixth year, are organised by themeparksuk.com, and there are 22 categories. In advance of the public vote, which will be open from July the 21st to September the 1st, the shortlist has been compiled using public nominations with the help of a panel of expert judges. Great Yarmouth Pleasure Beach is up for multiple awards, including Best Seaside Park and Best New Attraction for Leo's Jungle Journey. Pleasurewood Hills near Lowestoft has been shortlisted for Best Theme Park for Thrills, Best Seaside Park, Best Value Theme Park, Best Reimagined Attraction for Wipeout, and Best Integration of Technology in a Guest Experience for its facial recognition ride photos. Roar Dinosaur Park in Lenwade is up for Best Theme Park for Families, and Bewilderwood has been nominated for Best Theme Park for Toddlers and Best Customer Service. Pettit's Animal Adventure Park in Reedham is up for Best Theme Park with Animals, and the winners will be announced on September the 18th.
A Norfolk police officer was arrested after he had allegedly groped two women and a man on a dance floor while extremely drunk, quarters heard. Ben Poole had been on a night out in Norwich celebrating a colleague's birthday and was, quote, one of the more enthusiastic drinkers in his group. Greg Wedge, prosecuting, claimed that 25-year-old Poole, who was a serving Norfolk police officer at the time, was not only drinking his own drinks, but was also sweeping up other people's glasses as well. Poole had been on the dance floor at Bar and Beyond on Prince of Wales Road when he allegedly grabbed a woman inappropriately. Ipswich Crown Court was told he then allegedly approached a man and another woman and repeated his actions. Mr. Wedge said the alleged contact had been unwanted and made the man and two women feel uncomfortable, resulting in them leaving the dance floor. They had discussed what Poole had allegedly done, and he was asked to leave the premises. There is no dispute he was drunk, but that doesn't excuse his behaviour, said Mr. Wedge. Poole was put in a car and taken to his sister's house and was subsequently arrested. Poole, who gave no fixed address to the court, was based at Great Yarmouth Police Station at the time, but was suspended from duty in 2023 when the allegations first came to light. He has denied three offences of sexual assault dating back to October the 1st, 2022. The court heard that following his arrest, Poole said he remembered having a few drinks and being put in a car, but couldn't remember what happened during the middle part of the evening. Mr. Wedge said Poole told police someone must have spiked his drink and that he was in a state of involuntary intoxication, whereby he couldn't have intended to do anything. Mr. Wedge said the issue for the jury was whether or not Poole's actions were deliberate. The trial at Ipswich Crown Court continues and is expected to last several days.
Thousands of people enjoyed a record-breaking festival in a sun-soaked Caister. The Caister Festival took place over the sweltering weekend of June the 28th and 29th and has been hailed by organisers as the most successful event so far. Crowds of more than 4,000 gathered at the village playing field each day and were entertained with live music, a fun fair, food trucks and hundreds of stalls. And on Sunday, the weather cooled, allowing the dog show to go ahead. Kevin Wood, Caister Parish Council Chairman, said it was a record year with great weather and great music. All money raised over the 2 days will go towards Caister's Sensory Garden, which, although not yet complete, opened for the first time during the festival. The garden is a community project, and the Parish Council said it welcomes any volunteers who would like to work there. Applicants can register their interest at the Rabbit Hutch Cafe.
A car trader's future hangs in the balance after a landowner lost a High Court battle over a disputed patch of land. The site in question is next to Vauxhall Bridge in Yarmouth and is owned by Derek Smith. He bought the land in 1989 and leases it out to a business which sells and stores motor vehicles. But an appearance at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court last year saw Mr. Smith face charges at the dealership, which is fenced off and contains rows of cars and a porter cabin, was obstructing the highway. The trial heard that Vauxhall Bridge was effectively blocked off except for a small pedestrian pathway along the western side of the fence. The main dispute was whether or not the land was a highway. In his defence, Mr. Smith said that when he bought the site, his solicitors carried out local searches, but nothing had come back to suggest the land was a public road. According to the magistrates, however, photographs showed the land had been in continuous use for at least 20 years prior to 1988, and they found Mr. Smith guilty of 4 charges of obstruction. He appealed the convictions to the High Court, but after a hearing on June the 24th, his appeal was dismissed. It is believed that Great Yarmouth Borough Council is considering making a compulsory purchase of the land. Last year, the authority announced plans to renovate Vauxhall Bridge as part of a wider project to regenerate North Quay. The crossing first opened in 1852 and has been described as a rare survival of a wrought iron railway bridge. It served as a key gateway between town and country and carried horse, train, tram, car and foot passengers over its lifetime. In 1976, the railway line from the station to North and South Quays was closed, but people could still drive over until 1988, when it was closed to vehicles.
A Gorston Centre shop that sells kitchens will be converted into flats as its owners prepare to move to a new location. Andrew and Lorraine Underwood have been given planning permission to convert and extend a building on Gorston High Street. The property, currently the home of Priory Kitchens and Interiors, will be transformed into 3 one-bedroom flats. The shop will then operate from the Underwoods' home. Planners approved the application to transform the building. They said the absence of amenity space was unfortunate, but that the designs were good. The plans include a rear first-floor extension and 3 new flats to add to the 1 apartment already in the property. The building is currently used as a shop and workshop that sells bespoke kitchens and interiors. A neighbour had objected to the plans with concerns that the development would be overbearing and oppressive. The initial proposal had also contained cladding to the front of the property. A conservation officer objected and the Underwoods then removed that part of the plans. The conversion of the building means the northern end of Gorston High Street, once a bustling shopping area, will now become almost entirely residential, with single dwellings and flats. It is a far cry from 1984, when John Underwood first opened Priory Kitchens, then known as In Pine, and it was surrounded by independent businesses, including a DIY shop, a shoemaker's, fishmonger's, a newsagent and a clothes shop. While many of the properties have since been converted into housing, a handful of businesses remain, including Black Sheep Tattoo Parlour and the Short Blue Pub. Previously, Mr. Underwood has said, "In my lifetime, it has been a tragedy to watch all the shops disappear."
Now, staying on Goulston High Street, and a historic four-screen cinema that has hosted music and film stars is up for sale. The Palace Cinema in the High Street has hit the market for £500,000 as the owner looks to, quote, reduce his workload. The business is up for sale with Christie & Co. alongside its sister site, the Palace Cinema and Bingo Hall in Felixstowe, which is available for £800,000. They are available either individually or as a package and are offered for sale as going concerns, with opportunities for new owners to further develop and build on the existing trade. Patrick Duffy, Managing Director of Palatial Leisure Limited, said, "I've been in the leisure, entertainment and gaming business for more than 50 years, and the time is now right that I look towards reducing my workload. Hence the decision to sell our Felixstowe and Goulston properties. At the same time, we are making considerable investment into our principal asset, the Great Yarmouth Palace, which has the benefit of a 1968 gaming licence, particularly in preparation for the new regulations which come into play in July, given our ability to capitalise on the sports betting slots allowance." The Goulston Art Deco style cinema opened in 1939 with, would you believe, 942 seats in stalls and in a balcony. It closed in 1964 and was converted into a bingo club, which operated until early 2012. In June 2017, renovations began to transform the site into a four-screen, 403-seat cinema, which opened in October of that year. The cinema has hosted the East Anglian film premiere of Yesterday in 2019, with director Danny Boyle and writer Richard Curtis returning to the seaside town to pay homage to the film. Ed Sheeran was also a surprise guest at the premiere, as he starred in the film alongside stars Himesh Patel and Lily James. Great Yarmouth, Lowestoft, Southwold and Halesworth are all featured in that film.
Mystery surrounds the deaths of five deer belonging to a tech tycoon based in Norfolk. The shot animals were discovered on land off Birds Lane in Neatishead, part of the old RAF Neatishead's radar station, which is owned by entrepreneur William Sacchetti. Mr. Sacchetti, a tech tycoon known for his work in robotics and AI, said he was devastated by the killing of animals he had raised and cared for personally. The 41-year-old brought the herd of 20 deer from Scotland in 2023. Since then, the animals have grazed the land surrounding the former Cold War radar station, which is the headquarters of his company, the Academy of Robotics, and is near Wroxham. "These deer were not only part of a carefully managed herd, but animals I've cared for daily," he said. "To discover they were shot and left like this is deeply upsetting. It's not just a loss of pets, it's a senseless act that shows a complete lack of respect for animals and the community." He said it was an outrageous act, which has affected his family, who regularly spend time with the deer. The incident is believed to have happened around March the 1st, with police receiving a report several days later on March the 6th. Officers launched an investigation, but have since confirmed that all lines of inquiry have been exhausted, and the case has now been closed. Meanwhile, Mr. Sacchetti is currently facing legal action by the Ministry of Defence, which is suing him over his use of the land at the former RAF base. He bought the 26-acre estate in 2022 and lives and works there. Earlier this year, he announced plans to transform the old radar, which was decommissioned 20 years ago, into the hub of a new communications network.
A reality television star has been filming clips for ITV shows in Great Yarmouth. Jake Quickenden, who has appeared on The X Factor, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here and Dancing on Ice, visited Yarmouth on Monday morning. The 36-year-old was helping present segments for a prize draw for Loose Women, not a prize draw for Loose Women, a prize draw for the Loose Women TV show, of course, and This Morning. He was promoting ITV's competition to win a two-bedroom, fully furnished Lovett Park's Lodge at its Waxham Sands Holiday Park. The prize also includes costs for fees and bills for 2 years, as well as a £100,000 cash prize. Jake was pictured being taught how to make candy floss at Carousel Candy with William Hart, who's worked there for more than 20 years. He said, "It's my first time in Great Yarmouth and it's absolutely lovely. The atmosphere is buzzing and there's something to do for everyone, from attractions like the Pleasure Beach, the pier and lots of entertainment and a beautiful beach itself." Keith Wakefield, staff manager at Great Yarmouth First Buses, took the crew, including Jake and presenter Matt Johnson, on an open-top bus tour around the various attractions in the town. He said, "I've enjoyed the day, it's been a real experience and good publicity for our town and our services."
Cider lovers in the Great Yarmouth area and beyond are being invited to raise a glass during a series of events celebrating traditional real cider and perry this month. The East Norfolk branch of Camera has organised 2 cider discovery tours and a very special award celebration with more than 80 different real ciders and perries available to sample across the month. The events are timed to coincide with Camera's national cider and perry campaign. The first tour takes place this Saturday, July the 5th, beginning at Tombstone Brewery in Great Yarmouth at noon. From there, participants will travel by bus to a series of local pubs, including the William Adams, the Dock Tavern, the Odd Fellows, the Thirsty Crow and the Red Herring, each stocking real cider and perry. The tour is open to everyone, not just Camera members, and is being promoted as a relaxed discovery event rather than a pub crawl. Later in the month, on Sunday, July the 13th, the Blackfriars Tavern in Great Yarmouth will host a celebration marking its recent win as East Anglia Cider Pub of the Year, an award it has now claimed 2 years in a row. The event will include live music, cider-themed games and quizzes, and an official presentation by senior Camera representatives. Doors open from 11 a.m, with the award expected to be handed over between 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. A second discovery tour will take place on Saturday, July the 26th, this time visiting pubs to the north of Great Yarmouth that are easily reached by public transport. It starts at the King's Arms pub at noon. The tour is again open to members and non-members. Camera defines real cider and perry as being made entirely from the whole juice of fresh-pressed apples or pears, never from concentrate and never watered down after fermentation.
And an award-winning Yarmouth craft beer is now being served at one of Norfolk's best-loved seaside landmarks. Great Yarmouth-based Lakens Brewery has officially partnered with Cromer Pier, and the brewery's beer is available to enjoy at the Pavilion Theatre Bar and the Tides Restaurant. Sean Garrett, General Manager at Cromer Pier, said, "We're proud to serve Lakens, not just because it's fantastic beer, but because it represents something bigger. Like Cromer Pier, it's part of our cultural fabric, and it's come back stronger than ever. That's a story worth toasting." Lakens Brewery, of course, dates back to 1760 and was revived in 2013 after a 45-year hiatus, using 8 original yeast strains preserved in the National Yeast Bank. Now, did we ever know there was such a thing as a National Yeast Bank?
No.
Today, the brewery produces a range of award-winning beers using Norfolk-grown barley. The partnership adds to Cromer Pier's growing list of locally sourced suppliers, reflecting Open Wide Coastal's commitment to regional produce and authentic visitor experiences. It is said the pairing of Lakens and Cromer Pier celebrate shared values of heritage, craftsmanship and community spirit, offering visitors the chance to enjoy a true taste of Norfolk by the sea.
Well, more news in a short time, but first, Andrew has a reminder about an event which changed the UK profoundly.
Now, again, I'm bringing out my trusty book, One Day in History by Dan Snow. This is the 5th of July, and this very landmark institution was born. It was the birth of an institution under whose auspices so many of us have in turn been born, the NHS. Today, in 1948, the charismatic Health Secretary, Anarin Bevin, in a job previously considered rather lowly and not occupied by a cabinet minister, officially launched his grand, profoundly ambitious and at the time highly contentious project, a national health service for the entire British population. It was to be funded by taxation and free at the point of delivery, under which all sorts of people, namely doctors, nurses, surgeons, dentists, opticians, to name but a few, would be brought beneath one single organisation. The launch began at Park Hospital in Manchester, known as Trafford General. It was then that a 13-year-old girl named Sylvia Beckingham was admitted to the hospital for a liver condition, thereby becoming the first ever patient to be admitted on the NHS. Plenty derided the scheme. Some even deemed it the onset of National Socialism, so soon after the defeat of the Nazis in Germany. Nor were the opponents simply Conservative Party MPs. Plenty in the Labour Party were hostile too, as well as many doctors, whose mouths, Bevin remarked, he had, quote, stuffed with gold in order to secure their cooperation. Bevin made two major predictions, the first accurate and the second seriously inaccurate. Firstly, he was confident that the initial rush upon NHS services would wane in the short term, and he was sure that the high initial cost of the service would decline as the population became healthier. As we all know now, of course, the spectacular success of the NHS contributed to increasing British life expectancy, while the cost of new medicines and treatment, as well as the number of NHS employees, skyrocketed. Far from declining, the overall bill soared. So while affection for the institution has grown, funding for it has become such a headache.
That was a tuneful ditty called Happy Music from James Last and his orchestra, which is tenuously connected to Andrew's piece on the NHS, in that it was the first piece of music played on our local hospital radio station, Hospital Radio Year, when it started in 1977. Hospital Radio Year studio at Northgate Hospital was where Grapevine was produced from our start in 1980 for, well over 10 years, until we had a bequest which allowed us to have our own studio, albeit still on Northgate side. I did say the link was tenuous. Right, enough nostalgic rambling. It's back to Desney and Andrew for the second part of the news, followed closely by a look at the week's TV.
A speedboat with two adults and a child on board broke down off the Norfolk coast. It was reported at around 2:40 p.m. on Saturday that the vessel had stopped running around a mile off the coast of Great Yarmouth. Great Yarmouth and Galston lifeboat launched the all-weather Samar Beta lifeboat to the scene. The crew completed welfare checks and found everybody on board was fit and well. They towed the speedboat back to the harbour. The adults stayed on board while the boat was being towed, but the child was brought on the lifeboat to keep them safe.
Animal welfare activists have protested at a local venue over concerns about greyhounds racing in extreme heat. The protesters from the East Anglian branch of Action Against Animal Cruelty, AAAC, were at Yarmouth Stadium on Sunday, June the 29th. They held placards which said, "Hoot for the hounds, no excuse for animal abuse, and still racing dogs in this heat." They said they went to the racecourse after Saturday's greyhound racing went ahead despite temperatures reaching 30 degrees Celsius. The weather, they said, prompted concern from animal welfare groups over the potential health risks to the racing dogs. A spokeswoman for the group said, "It's deeply concerning to see races continue in conditions that would be dangerous even for a casual walk. Experts warn that racing in such high temperatures can cause severe dehydration, heat stroke, and even organ failure in greyhounds, a breed particularly vulnerable due to their thin coats and low body fat. Greyhounds are not built to cope with extreme heat, especially during high-intensity exertion." Animal advocacy groups have called for stricter regulations, including mandatory cancellation or rescheduling of races when temperatures exceed safe limits. In a greyhound welfare section on the Yarmouth Stadium website, it describes how the animals are looked after. It says, "Greyhound racetracks give greyhounds the opportunity to continue their love of chasing in a safe environment." It adds how dogs have to be inspected by a vet to ensure they are fit and healthy to compete following any injury and that there is an on-course veterinary scheme. There is also a scheme to rehome the dogs when they've finished their racing careers. It adds, "At Yarmouth Stadium, welfare is and always has been our top priority."
Six new priests and eight new deacons were ordained in Norwich Cathedral. All 14 are now serving as assistant curates in parishes across Norfolk and Waveney. The new priests, who have just completed their first year as curates, were ordained on Saturday by the Bishop of Norwich, the Right Reverend Graham Usher, in a service which was both solemn and joyful. And at a packed and celebratory service on Sunday, Bishop Graham ordained eight deacons who will now serve as assistant curates across the diocese. The ordinations were also attended by the bishops of Thetford and Lynn, all three archdeacons of the diocese, canons of the cathedral, clergy including the diocesan director of mission and ministry and the diocesan director of ordinance, and many friends and family of the new priests and deacons. The Reverend Canon Madeline Light, who retired last year as Vicar of St Stephen's, Norwich, preached at both services. And the locally based newly ordained deacons are the Reverend Hannah Morris, who is at Flegg, and the Reverend Gaynor Sutton, who is at Caister.
A local railway station has been recognised for its efforts to support wildlife and boost biodiversity. Lingwood Station has been awarded wildlife-friendly status through the Greater Anglia Wildlife-Friendly Stations Accreditation Scheme, a partnership between Greater Anglia and the region's wildlife trusts. The award celebrates the work of volunteer station adopters who help turn stations into havens for nature. Alan Neville, Customer and Community Engagement Manager at Greater Anglia, said, "We are delighted to partner with the region's wildlife trusts to formally recognise the valuable work of our station adopter volunteers in supporting wildlife and improving their local environment. I would like to congratulate the station adopters on receiving this recognition and thank them for the work they are doing to help support biodiversity locally." Pat and Roz Mio, along with fellow adopter Mike Hall, were recognised for their efforts after an assessment by an ecologist. The couple has lived in the station house for more than 35 years and maintained the station's borders and planters since moving in. The Norwich to Great Yarmouth station is filled with pollinator-friendly plants and shrubs. James Hogg, Development Officer at Norfolk Wildlife Trust, said, "This project with Greater Anglia is a fantastic example of how people can transform nature-poor areas into new nature-rich places and change the way we think about land, seizing opportunities to help nature outside traditional nature reserves." The Lingwood Station project is supported by the Wherry Lines Community Rail Partnership. Across East Anglia, more than 340 station adopter volunteers have turned over 10,000 square metres of railway land into wildlife-friendly gardens. Volunteers have reported sightings of butterflies, bees, bats, slowworms, lizards and a variety of birds at these stations. The scheme aims to support biodiversity and make railway stations more welcoming for both people and wildlife.
A Norfolk Tory has defended his hometown from an attack by a YouTuber who called it one of the worst resorts in the UK, but by taking a swipe at an Essex community. Daniel Candon, a senior Conservative on Great Yarmouth Borough Council, was responding to a recent video posted by an account called Learning Canteen. The profile, with more than 100,000 subscribers, compiled a list of the 10 seaside towns which have, quote, fallen furthest from their former glory, and Great Yarmouth came in 8th place. The video said, "Once a jewel of the Victorian seaside boom, Great Yarmouth today suffers from what many call coastal decay. Visitor reviews mention poor facilities, dated attractions and a nightlife that's more sleepy than seaside buzz." Now, the review has been dismissed by Daniel Candon, who responded by criticising Jaywick, a seaside community in Essex, where he believes the author of the video comes from. The coastal village near Clacton, with a population of under 5,000, is regularly assessed to be the most deprived area in England and has problems with unemployment and derelict buildings. In a statement published again on social media, Mr. Candon said, "So, a blogger from Jaywick, yes, Jaywick, thinks Great Yarmouth is the worst place in the UK. Let's be honest, if you're going to criticise a town, at least get out and see the country first. Maybe visit parts of Manchester, Birmingham or Luton, where crime, deprivation and lawlessness are far worse than anything we deal with here in Great Yarmouth. Yes, Great Yarmouth has its issues, no one's denying that, but we're a coastal town with heritage, spirit and people who fight for their community every day. If you're from Jaywick and throwing stones, maybe check your own postcode first." Strong words indeed. Great Yarmouth is frequently named in debates over the best and worst towns in the UK, and while some reviews are negative, other critics claim it is one of the greatest seaside resorts to visit in the country.
Yarmouth and Lowestoft, highest areas for PIP payments. More than one in 40 adults of working age in Yarmouth and Lowestoft receive benefits for mental health conditions like depression or anxiety, new data has revealed. The two towns have the highest number of people receiving personal independence payments, pips for these conditions in the region, according to the Department for Work and Pensions. The figures come as the Labour government is pushing for major reforms to the welfare system amid spiralling numbers of people claiming benefits for mental health illnesses. According to the data, of the 58,445 working age adults aged 16 to 64 in the constituency of Great Yarmouth, 2.6% of the population receive mental health PIP benefits. The highest number of PIP recipients for any condition are in the town's Central and Northgate ward and Nelson, three of the most deprived areas in the country, where about one in five people claim PIPs. In Lowestoft, 2.6% of its 53,577 working-age adults also receive mental health PIPs. Since January 2019, the number of people claiming financial support for anxiety and depression in both towns has more than doubled. Comparatively, about 2% of Norwich's 136,000 working-age adults receive the same benefit, with other areas of the county comparably lower. The number of PIP claimants for anxiety and depression conditions has risen sharply across Norfolk and has more than doubled in most constituencies. Anyone with a long-term physical or mental health condition or disability that affects their day-to-day life can receive PIPs. The most common illnesses claimed by PIP recipients are psychiatric disorders, with 1,444,016 cases across the country. Adults undergoing PIP assessments get scored on a scale of 0 to 12, which is based on how difficult they find everyday tasks, such as their ability to prepare and eat food. In 2024, the government spent £21.7 billion on PIPs and £52.1 billion on universal credit payments. Universal credit is available to eligible people on low income who are out of work or who are unable to work because of a health condition. The government wants to bring in extensive reforms of the benefits system and had hoped to save £5 billion by the end of the Parliament. However, a rebellion by Labour MPs has seen ministers water down its attempts to restrict PIP payments. The partial U-turn means 370,000 existing PIP claimants are no longer set to lose out on their benefits following reassessment. However, this has wiped £2 billion of the £5 billion savings the government hoped to make through the reforms. The government's updated proposals were the subject of a crunch vote in the House of Commons, which the government narrowly won. Disability Rights UK and Disabled People Against Cuts said in a joint statement, "The government have made it very clear that they are intent on slashing the support that so many disabled people rely on to work and live independently, no matter how many disabled people tell them what a harmful policy this will be." However, Simon Cook, a data analyst from the Taxpayers Alliance, said reform is needed. He told the Daily Mail, "It's clear from the data that something has gone horribly wrong with the UK's benefits system. The explosion in the number of people claiming for psychiatric disorders is undoubtedly driven partly by better diagnosis and greater respect for mental health conditions. But the scale of the increase surely demonstrates it's far more than just that."
A Great Yarmouth woman has warned of the dangers of harmful WhatsApp group chats for children. Inka Dando has called for awareness of online bullying. She is concerned about the impact it is having on children in the community. Working closely with schools in the area, Ms. Dando has seen the harmful environments that online spaces can become for young people. She said children are spending more time online than ever before, but many parents and carers don't realise the pressure, anxiety and harm that can happen in group chats and private messages. "I've spoken with pupils and teachers and I'm really concerned that many young people feel they have nowhere to turn. She reached out to Borough Councillor Daniel Candon to raise these concerns, seeking ways to protect children. Mr Candon, who represents Bradwell, said, "Inca raised an incredibly important issue and I'm happy to support her efforts." Miss Dando is now engaging with schools, parents and nearby organisations and has a talk planned with the college.
And here we are with a bit of news about television. Well, as you probably remember from last time I spoke to you, it's full of sport at the moment. We've got Wimbledon, we've got the Women's Euros, and this weekend too, we've got the Formula One British Grand Prix, which is from Silverstone, and so covered more on terrestrial television in Britain than any other Formula One Grand Prix. Tennis is going well. We'll be into the second week and therefore the finals. So it won't take quite so much airtime because there's not so many players left to play all the matches. I think Britain has been doing quite well. So we should still have a few British players left to watch in the second week. Now we come to the Euros, and this is where it really starts to get interesting because on Saturday, both Wales and England, who are in the same group, are playing their matches. Wales are playing the Netherlands at 5 o'clock, and France and England play at 8 o'clock. Now, one of those is on ITV and one of those is on BBC. Do you know which is which, Andrew? Have you got?
No, I can't say I do. I'll just be picking it up on the day, I think.
Yes, well, I think you may have to, but I did mean to write that down. After that, on Wednesday, we'll have England-Netherlands at 5 o'clock and France and Wales at 8 o'clock. See, I know those. Mm-hmm. And on the Sunday, the 13th, both matches, which will be England versus Wales and Netherlands versus France, take place at the same time. That's 8 o'clock in the evening. So if you've got one of each in your family that like England and Wales, tough. You'll just have to look forward to that one when you can fight between you, and the other ones you'll just have to decide who's got first choice. So really, then we get to the Silverstone Grand Prix. As I say, that is going to be live on 4, the actual race on Sunday. I think they may have some of the practice times live, but of course you can also see that on Sky. It might be on the main event, but it'll definitely be on Sky Formula One. Now for some other programmes that you might just about be able to fit in around these programmes. On Sunday, they're celebrating or commemorating, whichever you like to call it, because you don't celebrate what Live Aid was for, but you do celebrate what they were doing. That's a 40 years ago. Can you believe that?
I know.
When rock and roll took on the world. So BBC Two has a three-part documentary, and it's showing the first two parts on Sunday. The first is at 9 p.m. and the second is at 10 p.m. And the first one is about the crisis that sparked the idea and the brutally upsetting news that made Bob Geldof and his wife at the time think that something really had to be done. So how that first occurred is in the first programme. And then the second of the three programmes, which is immediately following the Sunday first one at 9, is the 10 o'clock one, is the logistics of the two concerts. You remember there was one in London and there was one on the other side of the Atlantic in the USA.
And Phil Collins famously played in them both, didn't
oh,
he?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Somebody did, you're yeah. right. So then they'll be, next week, they will have the third episode of that, as I say, of the three-part documentary about Live Aid. So at the same time, unfortunately, is another quite good programme that some people might fancy watching, and that's because Vicky McClure is in it. Now, she is best known for being in Line of Duty, but she has done lots of other things that you may have seen her in. And this time she is in a six-part drama called Insomnia. She's a successful and diligent lawyer, but she's obviously concealing some unsettling visions she's been having of a messed up childhood. She's been concealing them from her husband and thinking back to when her mother was just the same age as her, because this insomnia started for Vicky, who's actually Emma in the programme, 2 weeks before her 40th birthday. Her mother also had something like this happen to her at around the same age, seeing some rather shocking things happen and ending up having a psychotic episode herself. And her mother has always taunted her by saying, you'll get the same thing when you're that age and you've got bad blood in you. And she, Vicky, is terrified. And, well, over the course of 6 episodes, you will see what happens. So Sunday, Monday and Tuesday at 9 p.m. on Channel 5, followed by 3 more episodes on Sunday, Monday and Tuesday, the 13th, 14th and 15th. And finally, there's the last episode of the programme I told you about, I think a couple of weeks ago, where Noel Edmonds, who has now gone to one of Andrew's favourite places, New Zealand, on his Kiwi adventure. He is now into the last episode of the 3, and apparently he unveils big plans as high season nears. And that is on ITV on Friday at 9 p.m.
I've not yet been able to see any of that because my TV is under repair and I've not got catch-up on the little set. But by all accounts, by the reviews I've read, it's gone down really well. Apparently he's still got that charisma.
Yeah,
on
I
TV
think he's a bit of a Marmite person, isn't he?
Indeed, yeah.
People either love him or hate him.
They reckon the Kiwis apparently are having trouble adjusting to him with their very laid-back attitude. They're having trouble adjusting to him. So. Yeah. Desney, thank you. Can I give an honourable mention to radio as well while we're talking entertainment channels? I'm a bit of a fan of Radio 4 Extra, and if our listeners haven't tuned into it, can I say, give it a go, because there's some great older programmes on there, especially classic comedies. We get Hancock, The Goon Show. You'll get Paul Temple series, Round the Horn. But there's a lot of newer ones to enjoy as well. I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue is a great panel game. And there's a super programme, if any of you found it on Radio 4, called Conversations from a Long Marriage with the wonderful Joanna Lumley and Roger Allam. That's really nice, light programme to listen to. But they do some great features. Last week I listened to one last week called Diplomatic Dinners, and it was about the intricacies of catering in British embassies around the world. They're just really good programmes. But the big one that stood out for me was one about the history of local radio. And in fact, the BBC started out as local radio in the 20s as a sort of series of test broadcasts once they'd worked out how radio worked, before it became the network that we know and love today. So that's radio for you as well. Hope
yeah,
you enjoy.
Definitely worth listening to, and local radio as well.
Yeah, so we hope you enjoy watching and listening to both mediums.
Yes, I'm sure you find something on somewhere on there.
Queen and Radio Gaga. Queen, of course, was part of the Live Aid concert mentioned by Desney, and Radio has just been promoted by Andrew. So what else could I play? OK, let's get back to our main intent, bringing you the local news, and it's time for the last part for this week.
People in Norfolk have been urged to remain vigilant during the heatwave amid a rise in fires across the county. Since the amber heat health warning was issued on Friday lunchtime, firefighters in Norfolk have attended 32 fires in the open. Fires have been reported across the county from Thetford to Kelling and from Galston to King's Lynn. One of the fires was caused by a disposable barbecue, and several others have been caused by bonfires which were lit intentionally but got out of control. During the same weekend last year, when the weather was cooler, crews attended just 13 of these blazes. With the heatwave conditions set to continue until next Wednesday, people have been advised to take extra care to help reduce the risk of accidental fires, which, if not tackled quickly, can become wildfires. Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service's Head of Operations, Paul Seaman, said, "While the hot weather continues, we would ask residents and visitors to Norfolk to take extra care, not use disposable barbecues, and take a picnic instead. Please don't have bonfires, as these can quickly get out of control, and please discard smoking materials safely and take litter home with you. If our crews are busy attending these fires in the open, it means they're not available for fires and other life-threatening emergencies elsewhere. We are grateful to both our whole-time and on-call crews for effectively dealing with this weekend's incidents and ensuring the safety of our county." Firefighters attended 10 fires in the open on Friday in locations including Galston, Warham, Hardingham, Norwich and Southacre. On Saturday, they attended 13 fires in the open, including in Thetford Forest, Norwich, West Winch and Great Yarmouth. There were 6 further fires in the open on Sunday and another 3 on Monday morning.
And staying on a rural theme, a serene piece of Norfolk countryside, including a derelict 19th century wind pump, is up for sale with a guide price of £450,000. The nature-rich grazing marshes at Runham, near Great Yarmouth, are being sold via rural agency Savills. The coastal property includes 89.35 acres of grassland, frontage to the River Bure, woods, reed beds and the 5 Mile House wind pump. The Grade 2 listed building, constructed in 1849, is currently derelict, but agents say there could be potential to convert it for another use, subject to the required planning permission. Christopher Miles, director in the rural agency team for Savills in Norfolk, said, "The grazing marshes at Runham offer an opportunity to own a piece of serene countryside on Norfolk's coast. A blend of productive grassland, meandering waterways and vibrant wildlife, together with a mooring on the River Bure, it provides a sense of peace and tranquility. Rich in biodiversity, it's a haven for nature enthusiasts and bird watchers alike, perfect for those seeking their very own sanctuary away from the hustle and bustle of modern life, or for those who are looking for top quality grazing with its high water table, which enables reliable growing conditions with minimum risk of susceptibility to drought. The 5 Mile House wind pump also has magnificent views across the marshes and River Bure and could offer potential for conversion to alternative uses subject to the necessary planning consents." Now, this site is accessed off the A47 Acle Strait, and the land is split into 9 fields divided by drainage ditches, and the grazing is actually licensed to a grazier until the end of October. Agents said the grassland is over, quote, "loamy and clay soils of coastal flats with naturally high groundwater, or marsh as we know them, and its environmental features are managed as part of a mid-tier countryside stewardship agreement, which runs until the end of December 2027. What a purchase for somebody.
A convicted sex offender found with indecent images of children admitted child sex offences after he first lied to police about having 2 phones, a court has heard. Liam Latour, who has previous convictions for child sex offences, was found by police to have uploaded indecent images of children to online platforms. Norwich Crown Court heard when police went to the 25-year-old's Galston address in February this year. He initially lied about having any devices, but a police search of the property uncovered two phones, on one of which indecent images were found. Latour of Maple Way, Galston, has admitted three counts of making indecent images of children. He also admitted an offence of possessing an extreme pornographic image. Latour also admitted being in breach of a suspended sentence order imposed in 2023, 15 months suspended for 24 months for engaging in sexual communication with a child. Latour, who is represented by Matthew McNiff, was due to be sentenced on Wednesday, but the hearing was adjourned by Judge Jeremy Don. The judge said he wanted more information about the offences, as well as further reports to be carried out. Sentencing will now take place on September the 15th.
And the number of sex offences on the rail network in Norfolk have increased, including cases of rape and indecent assaults. There has been a rise in reported sex crimes at train stations in the county every year since 2022, according to figures obtained by Sexual Abuse Compensation Advice. The true figures are likely to be much higher, as a large number of women do not report their experiences, as many feel scared or believe that their experience won't be taken seriously. A survey of 2,000 people commissioned by the British Transport Police, the BTP, last year found that over a third of women had been a victim of sexual harassment or sexual offending on their commute. Incidents of offences seen at train stations have included indecent exposure or cyber flashing, which can have a lasting psychological impact on victims. In 2022, the BTP logged four serious sex crimes at Norfolk stations, the lowest number of crimes over the past 3 years. A year later, this number increased to eight, with another rise over the past year. A total of 11 were reported in 2024. Detective Chief Inspector Nia Meller said, "We know that these crimes commonly go underreported, which is why we relentlessly campaign to encourage witnesses and victims to report these offences to us. With this, we expect the number of reports to continue to rise. We view this increase as a positive sign that our efforts are paying off, and that women and girls are feeling more confident to report all forms of sexual harassment and violence on the rail network to us."
The Conservative Party in Great Yarmouth has announced a new leadership team. Councillor Graham Plant has been elected as the new chairman of the association. Joining him are Daniel Candon and Paul Wells, both as deputy chairman, Emma Flaxman-Taylor, who takes on the role of treasurer, and Carl Smith, who has been appointed secretary. Mr. Plant said, "We are entering a vital time for Great Yarmouth, and I am proud to lead this team as we work hard to win back the confidence of local residents. Our focus is simple: deliver real results for our communities, campaign on the issues that matter, and listen to people on the doorsteps. Something we have always done all year round," he added. Mr. Plant was born in Burnley in 1957. His family moved to Great Yarmouth Borough when he was 11, and he now lives in Bradwell. Before beginning in local politics, he began his training as a chef in Great Yarmouth and then headed to Switzerland, where he completed his qualifications. His venture into politics began 25 years ago when he became a councillor to try to change how Great Yarmouth's seafront was maintained. Mr. Plant is a borough and county councillor and is a cabinet member for Highways. Highways, Transport and Infrastructure at county level and deputy leader at borough council level.
When Graham was mayor, we interviewed him a few years ago, and he said that the reason he became a councillor was he had a business on the seafront and he complained about the muck down there, and someone said, "Why don't you become a councillor then and do something about it?"
So he did.
And that's where he's gone on and become there.
Good for him.
Staying with politics now, and a controversial historian once dubbed the rudest man in Britain has joined a Norfolk MP's new political venture. David Starkey has announced he's become a member of independent Great Yarmouth MP Rupert Lowe's Restore Britain movement, launched earlier this week. He is one of the highest profile people to join ex-Reform MP's campaign, which has promised to, quote, carpet bomb the cancer of wokery, whatever that means. Dr. Starkey was once a common presence on TV and radio, but has been involved in several controversies over the years for remarks he's made. In 2020, he'd lost publishing deals and university positions after saying in an interview, "Slavery was not genocide, otherwise there wouldn't be so many damn, I'm sorry I've got to say this word, blacks in Africa or in Britain, would there?" That's as it was written to us. Restore Britain has celebrated Dr. Starkey joining as a member. The movement's membership fee is £20, while higher donations of £2,500 or more will grant access to an exclusive Cromwell Club. In a post on the platform X, a spokesman for the group said, "As one of the country's leading historical minds, David will help to guide us as we aim to restore Britain." Well, Rupert Lowe has been attracting big attention because his new political movement has seemingly gained support from Elon Musk, but has left critics in his constituency of Yarmouth lost for words. The tech tycoon appeared to endorse the launch of Rupert Lowe's Restore Britain, and responding to the great Yarmouth MP's announcement on Monday, the billionaire, and of course the owner of X, commented on a post on the social media website with two Union Jack symbols. Restore Britain, an account created to promote the political movement, took this as a sign of support and responded, "Elon agrees." The ex-Reform MP insists it is not a political party and says he aims to, quote, fundamentally change the way Britain is governed through this campaign. The policies it announced initially include restoring the death penalty, defunding the BBC and, quote, deporting all illegal migrants, all issues which Mr. Lowe frequently posts about on social media. However, local politicians are far from impressed by his new venture. Trevor Wainwright, the leader of the Labour group at Great Yarmouth Borough Council, said, "I am lost for words." He has admitted he is a nobody in Parliament. If he is a nobody, what is he bringing to the table for Great Yarmouth? People voted for him as an MP for Reform, not an independent. Why not call a by-election and let people decide what they want? Daniel Candon, a senior Tory in Great Yarmouth, said, "I respect Mr. Lowe's desire to reform the political system and I agree the country needs serious change. But people don't just want political slogans, they want tangible results. National movements can bring energy, but change has to be rooted in communities like ours. And that means better housing available, more jobs and investments into our borough, better skills, opportunities, cleaner and safer streets, and support for families who are working hard to get by."
Well, that's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Your newsreaders next week will be Andy and either Margaret 1 or Margaret 2 and or Julie. So we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. Yes, we do have a reader's rota, but during the summer months it invariably gets changed. In the meantime, though, from all of us here at Grapevine, we wish you a good week, stay safe and well, and, of course, bye for now.